Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Bigamex Radio Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Racetech. Racetech Gold Valves, they need to be in your motorcycle. And did you know that they also do engines? Yeah, Racetech engines, unbelievable. They even do some engines for some pro teams and some factory teams in the pits. They sign NDAs and they don't disclose these types of things, but Racetech does build engines that race in the factory ranks here in the AMA Motocross. So just so you guys know, you could probably guess one of the teams that's doing that, but it's pretty incredible that a company like Racetech is building engines for the top tier athletes in the sport. Also want to give a huge shout out to Luxon MX. Those guys are awesome. Billy, essentially the guy is a mechanical engineer who loves motocross. He has a mechanical engineering firm that does some incredible stuff, far and away, like this stuff asks so much more of him and his expertise and his business, than what would be asked of with motocross. And that's why he makes some of the most amazing products known to man when it comes to the motorcycle. It is bare bones, right down to it. It's what works. Luxon MX is on some of the best teams in the pits. That they've been obviously been with Club MX for a number of years. If I'm not mistaken, they're also with the International Supercross team with Bubba Polly and those guys. Also with the PRMX guys. Like these teams that are sort of just below factory level are able to go to a company like Luxon, because a lot of the factory teams, the triple clamp situation, whether they do it straight up factory or if they happen to go with a different aftermarket brand, those aftermarket brands are the ones that are cutting really big checks to be on those teams. And they see that as marketing dollars and advertising for their business. And they give a lot of product, and it usually comes with a pretty price tag as well. Luxon MX is just not a big enough company to be able to just like lock, stock, and barrel. Yeah, we're going to pay to be the triple clamps on factory Cowie. Honestly, I don't know if even if that would help him grow his business as quickly as it has working with companies, and teams like the International Supercross team with Bubba Polly, like the Club MX guys. Those guys are great on social media. Like Luxon must be doing great with them, especially with the anodizing that they're capable of. Now, here's the thing about the anodizing is that, like, they do all kinds of fun colors. They obviously do, like, your reds, the blues for Yamaha and stuff like that. They obviously also do black. But if you want to do any color, like, he does offer this. It's obviously on your dime as far as, like, if it's a super unique color and they're only going to do one, it's going to cost you some money. But if that's in the budget, they can do it for you, and they've made some really cool builds happen for that reason. But you guys probably clicked on this video to talk about Anaheim 1, not necessarily to hear me go on and on about my sponsors. I do have some awesome ones. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. I'm in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and this is my review of Anaheim 2026. Let's jump in straight into things with the 250 class. And elder statesman in both classes, but it was Max Anstey winning the opening round. I was so excited to see this guy have an amazing A1. He was emotional about it after the races. And like, I love how, like, if you have Max on the show and he's been on the show before, you might only ask him like one or two questions and it's going to be an hour long podcast. Like, Max will take the question that you asked and turn it into a ball of yarn that is just, it would stretch around the world a couple of times. The guy just, like, he loves to tell his story. He was on Pulp the other night and he was talking about just how happy he is to be where he's at in life. And that is such a beautiful thing when he's got his family and he worked so hard to be, an amateur superstar and try and make his way in AMA racing. And it honestly like bit him in the ass so hard. And like, he was with some teams that probably, he was with Star Racing Yamaha back in the day. And he was even with, I believe, the J-Star, KTM team and all kinds of stuff. And things just didn't work for the guy. He went back to Europe, raced there for 9 years. Like, that 9 years is a long career. And heck, Ricky Carmichael's career was only 9 years, or 10 years. And, that's how long Max was over in Europe. He's been back over in the States for, I believe, 5 years now. And now, after he's raced in the 450s, he's led laps and he's won races in the 250s, and now he's won A1. That is such a beautiful story. Like, that is a script that you could sell to Hollywood. Like, foreigner comes over, tries his best, sent back over to Europe, and then has come back to the land of opportunity and is able to grab life by the balls and get that done. Max Anstey, as advertised, fast. He's one of the fastest lap times of the night, if I'm not mistaken. If he was, by almost a full second over Chance Hymus. Also really excited to see the 29 machine get up there. You expect good things from Chance Hymus. He has the speed. He has the fitness. He has an amazing team behind him that right now, without Jet Lawrence or Joe Shimoda like racing right now or riding, that's a lot of focus. That's a lot of great minds over there. I'm talking about guys like Shane Drew, guys like Lars Lindstrom, Ben Griffith, all those guys. They live and breathe the sport of motocross, and they've gotten to HRC because they are who they are and they know what they know. They work so hard at what they do. And now Chance Hymus, who his dad literally is on Instagram as Dr. Honda, just living out the dream of any young man who's like brought up racing and wanting to ride for the factory teams. Like, regardless if you grew up as a blue crew, team green, or ride red, like, you have respect for that red wing and what it means to ride for HRC and get a podium in that first round. And then that takes us to the third step on the podium. And you just have to feel good for Ryder DeFrancesco. So much hard work, so much trials and tribulations, injuries, different teams, expectations, hype, all that bullshit. And the guy just keeps swinging. The guy keeps coming back. And there's a number of other athletes that honestly even came before him that were on that Team Green program who have like really had a tough time and have had to either hang up the boots or get back to the drawing board more than a couple of times. And there's a lot of people that if they went through what Ryder D has gone through so far in their career, they would probably think better of it. And they would just try something else. But this guy is an absolute fighter. He's got the skills to pay the bills, and Ryder McNabb, or Ryder McNabb, which I believe they used to ride together, Ryder McNabb and Ryder DeFrancesco, both Cowie boys back on 80s and super minis, but, just so happy for him. You know what I mean? Like, in the media, you don't want to pick favorites, but you do love a good story, don't you? You like these guys who, get knocked down and come back swinging, and, you can say that, but about every single guy that's on the podium, actually, every single one of these guys has had some sort of adversity in their young careers or in Max Anstey's career, in Max Anstey's case, a very old career. Every single one of those guys is a comeback story in some way, shape, or form. And, yeah, you gotta be feeling good if you're those three brands, three different bikes on the top, on the podium. Yamaha takes the top spot, followed by Honda and Husqvarna, which you didn't even know if you'd see a lot of Husqvarna up in the podium this year. A lot of their guys have cut, like that entire 250 team has had a lot of ups and downs. You got Casey Cochran over there. You have Daxon Bennick, who has shown so much potential. And same thing with Ryder D. All three of those guys are kind of, I wouldn't say waiting in the wings or in sort of limbo, but, I think there's justification for all three of them to have some sort of question marks or some sort of like fair criticism that, haven't, like been as dominant as they possibly could have been or should have been, especially if you measure them against someone like where, you got in the fourth place position, which I believe now is two-time SMX champion, one-time Supercross champion and two-time outdoor national champion in Hayden Deegan. And I've been outspoken about this kid in the past. Do I have respect for his speed and his fitness and his riding ability? Absolutely. Do I question his character at times and wish that he didn't bring this sort of, WWE shit talking, mentality to, the sport? Absolutely as well. I think there's like, there's a certain class that like having being able to win with class and to be humble and to be just appreciative and grateful. And this is not my kind of champion. And if he's your kind of champion, then all power to you. I'm sure you love the guy, but there's things about Hayden Deegan's game that I absolutely despise. And you can't argue with the riding. Although, of course, I will say that it did seem that he was a bit careless with the tail end of his motorcycle as he came across the line of one Cameron McAdoo, who receives no points on the night after getting cross-jumped. Whether it's intentional or not, I think you're responsible for where your motorcycle is. And Hayden Deegan was not able to do that. I think that that's obviously something you need to go back to the drawing board on as far as the night. Fourth was not in the plan, I'd assume. The number one W will have black plates for this coming weekend. And I don't know when he gets back to the top step. He did look fast. One of the fastest lap times. He was fourth fastest, I believe, if not. Oh, that was on lap eight. But his fastest lap time, he was. Kitchen had a faster lap. He was damn near, damn close to the top lap. He's just a little bit slower than his teammate, Max Anstey. But moving on down there, you've got Michael Mosman doing exactly what Michael Mosman needs to do, top five. I think this is probably his last year at Star, unless he just lights the world on fire. But what I hope for Michael Mosman is that this year is either a year where he's able to keep that ride or rides well enough to get himself on good equipment for years to come. National number 23. He is capable of winning races in this class. But it is a stacked class because you got Levi Kitchen in the sixth place spot, outside the top five, not what he had drawn up whatsoever. But if you come through the first corner on the ground, that's kind of what's going to happen. He's able to move through, and get to the top six. Probably wish he could have had a little more. He ended up 4 seconds adrift from Michael Mosman. Guys who sort of impressed me, Avery Long. Didn't expect him or Hunter Yoder to be in the top 10 at the first round, but especially Yoder dealing with a knee. Both those guys, they tucked themselves inside the top 10 alongside Dylan Schwartz. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that is the only Bar X submission in the top 10. And that, yeah, he's leading that team. Mumford, you would have expected a little bit that he would have at least beat his teammate. He's 11th. Robbie Wageman, great ride from him. He's on that hot sauce, Heartbeat Hot Sauce team. I think they're on, if I'm not mistaken, they're running, Alias Gear, not mistaken. Would have expected a little more from Parker Ross. Not sure what was thorn in his paw for the evening, but everyone else seems to sort of be where you'd expect them, aside from, of course, Cameron McAdoo, who was put on the ground. That was about halfway through the race where he ended up having that situation. Moving on, to the 450 class. Before we get to that, we need to throw it to my interview with Alana Parrott from Rider Insurance. This is Alana Parrott here on the Big MX Radio Podcast with Rider Insurance. Enjoy this interview, and we'll get right back to it with the 450 class. 2-1. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Luxon MX. Regardless of how much time you spend on your motorcycle, it can handle better if you rely on Luxon MX for not only the engine hangers, but the triple clamps and also lots of their chassis components. It's an amazing company. Billy over at Luxon, he's been generous and has sponsored the podcast for 3 years in a row now. We appreciate those guys as well as our friends over at Race Tech. This is a Race Tech podcast, and they recently came out with some brand new gold valves for both the 65s and the 85. So even the little guys are going to be benefiting from the gold valves. I currently have a set of those in my KTM. I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, we've got a parrot. No, wait, that's Alicia Parrott. How's it going?
Alana, going? But Alana, that's okay. Parrott. I've been called worse.
Same here.
I'm great.
How are you, Alana Parrott? Not only are you a moto mom, but you are also an insurance agent, and here to tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, would love the opportunity to share a little bit about what I'm doing, focusing on the motocross community and helping fellow families and riders find protection that's been really beneficial to me and my family.
That's awesome. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of the insurance side of things, I'm sure there's some moto moms listening that'd be rather curious of how the sport of motocross was introduced to your family and eventually how you were able to sort of find how the insurance side of things was able to not only keep your son like better protected, but also a little bit of peace of mind when he heads out onto the track, because moms can get a little bit nervous when the revs get picked up.
Absolutely. And I guess our kind of journey, we had no background in motocross. My husband picked up our boy a dirt bike to ride at the farm. One trip to the Wild Rose Motocross Association, he got bit by the bug. I guess he was probably like 6 or 7 years old. And he's been racing for 20 years now. I hate to age myself, but it's been an unbelievable journey. I worked in a couple motocross shops. I ran the finance office at a well-known Calgary shop, or Okotoks, I guess. I worked and did marketing for the Wild Rose Motocross Association. And after COVID, I found the opportunity to kind of learn more about a product that had really helped my family along the way. We all know that motocross might be considered reckless, but I think it's calculated risk.
Definitely.
And riders deserve kind of protection that understands the sport. And it had greatly benefited us. I think T got coverage when he was about 14 years old. And I got licensed to offer the benefits about 2 years ago.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So it's only been over the last 2 years then.
For me, absolutely. The product has been around for over 100 years. The company is right? So, but I'm kind of coming in on a different, let's say, focus, educating riders in our extreme sports that there's actually coverage out there that'll benefit them.
Fair enough. So, I think there's a lot of people that would probably assume, and I was certainly one of them roughly about a week ago, that when it comes to things like beer league hockey or motocross or anything that kind of spikes the adrenaline, that's not something that an insurance company would ever touch. You're not going to have the opportunity to be covered when you participate in those types of things, because it's sort of like at your own risk, so to speak. And that's why we sign the waivers and this, that, and the other thing. But you're here to say the exact opposite.
Yeah, like the company I work for does specialize in small business coverage, self-employed people. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, no, sorry. There was a little bit of a delay there.
Okay. Sorry.
Of course.
The company I work for does specialize in small businesses and self-employed coverage. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay. We offer accident, sickness, disability, critical illness, and cancer care. But our accident policies are the one few, I guess, options for someone who is involved in high-risk sports. And we don't just cover you while you're racing. We cover you at work. We cover you at school. We cover you at the track. We cover you on the ski hill. So it's just one of those few niches that doesn't eliminate high risk sports. And that's where I feel it's worth sharing to this community.
So Alana, what would you say is the biggest hurdle that a lot of potential clients need to sort of overcome in order to sort of understand the value of the insurance and the validity to it? In fact, when you had originally mentioned on the rider insurance, from the Rider Insurance Instagram about a week ago, we discussed that that coverage was even possible, even I sort of retorted, like, it sounds a little bit too good to be true. Which I think is fair because, like, that type of coverage, as far as I'm concerned, has been rather unheard of. But you were quick to call me up and explain the contrary.
Well, yeah, who would believe that a high risk sport like motocross, when we all know, even at a young age, you know, breaks happen, collarbones, femurs, hands, you know, it happens. It's a part of our risk as a family. I think that we walk into it saying, you know what, hockey players get hurt, skiers get hurt, you know, football players get hurt. You know, I feel that we trust our riders to know and look after themselves. Like I said, I feel it's a real calculated risk, but injuries happen. I think everybody feels, oh, well, we're lucky. We have free healthcare in Canada. I think that provides a false sense of security since it doesn't pay for mom and dad to miss work when little Johnny is in the hospital or now can't go to school. Most disability plans won't cover you when you're hurt on the track, even if you, you know, have a good work plan. It doesn't cover loss of income normally when injuries happen. And we don't pay your hospital bills. Our coverage pays you. It is personal accident hospitalization coverage. So if you need stitches, I don't care how it happens, we're going to be able to pay out a claim. If you need surgery, if you're hospitalized for any injury, soft tissue or broken ICU, we pay a recovery payout. We pay and reimburse your ambulance. You know, everybody thinks we have coverage until they get their ambulance bill.
Right.
Try to go racing in Saskatchewan and get taken to the hospital room or the hospital from a Saskatchewan track. I think I just had a bill come from a bronc rider that was transferred from an event to a Saskatchewan facility. They were $5,000 in hospital bills.
That's
the girl
crazy.
Was super lucky. She has coverage that's going to reimburse a lot of those expenses. So, and you can use the money as you want, Brad. Like, I'm not going to tell you how you have to spend your money when you get your payout. He's taken the money and gone to Florida and trained down there. He's repaired bikes. He's bought new gear, right? I'm sure he's paid his rent with his payouts in the past.
Absolutely. So take me through, so just sort of like a theater of the mind of like, say, I'm out at the practice track on a Wednesday night at Grunthal here in Manitoba. I happen to put a wheel wrong. I break my leg, or I end up taking a set of handlebars to the chin and now I need 10 stitches. First of all, like nobody's worrying about insurance, at that exact moment, but, say the next morning, my stitches are feeling a little bit tender. How do I go about, like filing a claim and all that fun stuff? And what sort of is the process of things sort of being rectified?
Well, luckily, anybody who buys a policy with me and Rider Insurance, they get me, and I declare myself a claim specialist. I think we're probably around $38,000 in claims for my family alone since we've had protection. So I've filed a few, big and little. Let's use T when he broke his femur in Calgary. Got home from work in the rigs, couple days on the bike, I think maybe the second day on his bike, feeling great, literally hit a turn the wrong way, was ejected from the bike and broke his femur. So I was the lucky one who once again got a phone call. Usually it's Jackie Seitz who gives me a shout and says, hey, Alana, I'm here with T, he's hurt. She's our moto mom, you know, usually trackside. So he got hauled off to the Foothills Hospital. I ended up meeting him there. The next, they put him into traction. The next day he had surgery. A couple days later, he was released. The process is simple when you know what's necessary. So we try to get after visit records. So if you just go to the emergency room, we want to make sure you walk out with some paperwork. A lot of times you do have to go and see your doctor. A lot of times the surgeons at the hospital won't do that paperwork for you. So I always say, plan on booking an appointment with your family doctor. He can complete the physician statement. And then the rest of the paperwork is ours to do. I'm here to walk you through it. I will review all the paperwork before we submit it because we don't want to hold the claims up for any reason. Normally, claims are paid in 15 to 20 business days. After Christmas, due to the number of injuries that happen over that Christmas period, when ice comes out, slips and falls, etc., I think we're 25 business days right now for a paid claim. That's about it. We pay a lot of claims. I looked up the number of claims we have paid since the beginning of this business, which is combined insurance, and they've paid out $28.18 billion in claims. Now, that's going to include sickness claims, disability claims, critical illness claims, and a lot of accident claims.
Wow. That's
incredible.
It's
a strong
incredible.
Company, right? Yeah. Like, we've got a lot of background. We're rated A+ superior by AM Best. Just don't advertise until we can have an opportunity to chat with someone like you and we can educate the community, right?
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is the biggest misconception when it comes to speaking to clients and maybe a biggest misunderstanding among the populace, aside from the fact that the people not believing that the coverage exists
it's too
to begin
good.
With.
You're 100% right. It's too good to be true, right?
Okay.
You're
okay.
telling me right now you're going to pay me $5,000 and I get stitches in my finger from walking through a gate and slicing my hand open. I had a customer, actually, a motocross boy in Calgary, sliced his hand with his sprocket doing maintenance. One called and said, really, you guys are going to pay for this? And I said, absolutely. Stitches are considered surgery. So it's kind of gravy. Yeah, stitches are pretty minimal compared to what we face a lot of times with the injuries we experience. But because it's considered surgery, it is a paid claim. Now, I have policies that will pay you up to $5,000 for stitches.
Okay, so let's get into some of the policies then. I'm sure the next thing that people think of is, all right, so like if this exists, this must cost me an arm and a leg in between when if I happen to hurt myself. So maybe I'm going backwards before we go forwards.
No, I'm pulling up my rates. Very reasonable. Start at about $17 a month. My tablet's going to answer me. I apologize. We start about $17 a month.
Okay.
Now, with that smaller plan, let's use stitches as example, that would be a $1,000 payout or $100 a day hospitalization. Now, recovery is 3 times your hospital stay for hospitalization. So that little plan for $17 a month, which is what, lunch for the average kid, still is better than having nothing.
Yeah. That's somewhere near minimum wage up here in Canada.
So we take you to the next level. $2,000 for stitches, right? $2,000 for fracture, $200 a day for hospitalization, $800 a day for ICU, plus the recovery, which is times 3, and your ambulance reimbursement, and that's $35 a month.
Hmm. Okay.
So we go up. $3,000 payout will cost you around $52 a month. A $4,000 payout is going to cost you about $70 a month. And the big policy plans, like I said, $5,000 for stitches is $92 a month. But one paid claim is going to pay you over 4 years of protection.
Yeah. And in my experience, and maybe I need to get sharpen my skills on a dirt bike, but I typically, in the last 4 years, have definitely been to the hospital, maybe not in the ICU, but definitely walked in there with a dislocated shoulder, wondering if someone could help me. I always found it funny, whenever they would give me, the anesthetic for my shoulder dislocation, they'd be like, you're going to feel a little pinch here. I'm like, yeah, shoulder's dislocated. But, either way, it's awfully interesting to hear that, the the coverage exists and it's actually quite affordable. I probably would be more inclined to lean towards the $35 option over the $17 option. But that's coverage for me. What about my family? Like I say, like I have my lovely girlfriend. I don't know if that gets lumped in. I'm sure that's a gray area, but, say if like I'm a contractor. My dad actually probably, aside from the fact, like he's been a contractor for the last 40 years. He works at Red River College. But aside from that, like I doubt very much that my dad's had any, coverage, as a sole proprietor for a masonry contracting company like that.
Right. So when a guy like that, you know, let's say accidentally his hand with a hammer. I've had contractors who take a nail gun to the foot. We cover, again, accident, sickness, disability, plus we can write that off through a person, like through a business owner. You can now write our personal monthly payments off as personal protection. We also have, as you were talking, your girlfriend, we have family plans. So okay. A family plan would cover a family. Now, structure, there's definitely some variation to what is a family. But let's say you guys have lived together for a couple years. Okay. She has a son. We're going to call you a family, 100%. Now, our policy.
We have a Labradoodle named Cooper.
Perfect. Cooper's going to be your new child.
Okay. He's seven.
If we had a family group, including parents and children, have the $17 individual plan would be a $42 family plan, and it would cover mom and dad, all children under the age of 17 until the age of 25. Those that are 18 and older need to be on their own individual plan, and for you and your girlfriend, financially the price, you're better off with two individual plans.
Yeah, I think we both do like the $35 option, or maybe she does the $17 option because she doesn't live life on the edge quite like I do. So, her getting stitches probably not nearly as likely. Although, hey, anything can happen. You know what I mean? So,
well, people slip on the ice every day out here in the winter. I think that's why our delay is currently with our claims, is because there are so many injuries that happen just by people walking down the street at this time of year, right?
Oh, my front steps are treacherous right now. We went from +2 degrees, and that's Celsius, so 32 for my American listeners, and then right now it's -20. So my front yard is a ice rink.
Opposite. We're like +6 right now. So all the snow and ice that we had buried underneath the snow is now sleeper. Kevin slipped and fell yesterday, wandering around the house with all the aches and pains of injury. But it happens, right? Talking about your American friends, let's address this.
Sure.
Combined insurance is available in the United States.
Okay.
It is not something I can sell them. I am licensed in BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, and I'm currently getting my license in Ontario. So that will be very soon. I can offer all of our Eastern riders and associates coverage. We cover Canadians North American. So they're covered in Canada and in the United States. So I've got a ton of boys down in Florida, Texas, riding right now that have coverage. It's not travel protection. So remember, we don't pay your hospital bills, but if Tyler gets hurt down there, he has his traditional travel coverage that'll pay his hospital. We will pay him for all of the excess that he experiences down there. And then we make that claim when he comes home and line his pockets so he can take time and he can heal properly.
Oh, wow. So like, and you'd mentioned, when your son, and for those who don't know, T. Parrott, very accomplished Canadian pro, he's been chasing the outdoor nationals, here in Canada for a number of years. If he goes down to Florida, he goes down to Dreamland and gets the bike all kinds of sideways, happens to have a little bit of a mishap, he's covered.
Yeah. Who could imagine that ever happening? Right. Yeah. He did his left arm. He broke his ulna and destroyed his wrist. I think it was a couple days before he was planning on heading back home. He ended up spending 7 days in the hospital after surgery. And again, he had great travel coverage, so hospital bills were paid for. When he came home, he filed his claim with help, of course, of mom. I think that one paid out close to 10 grand from when he got home. Now, he could no longer go to work because he couldn't use his arm. He didn't have a job that was savvy enough, you know, to just be one-handed. It was a physical job. So T was off, I would have to say, at least 6 to 8 weeks. So 10 grand came in really handy. Did it put a damper on his motocross season? Absolutely. But to know he could pay his bills, pay his rent, didn't have to move back home with mom and dad because an accident happened, really allowed him to heal mentally as well, right? Knowing that you were going to be okay. Because when you don't have an income, now you can't race. You know, let's be honest, that's hard on anybody.
Yeah, no, I'm grumpy if I can't get out on the bike and get some throttle therapy. So how can people reach out and learn a little bit more? I'm sure there's a website involved. I'm sure we can link that in the description of this podcast. But how can people reach out, learn more? And if they happen to be interested, how do they get in touch with you specifically to drive some sales and ultimately offer some protection that they aren't currently enjoying?
Absolutely. Well, I do have a website. You can look it up right under my name, alannaparrott.ca, or actually just Google rider insurance and you'll see me pop up. Yep. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. And, you know, I'm sure there's a way of sharing my phone number, et cetera, with anybody who is interested. There's also a messaging through my website that I can reach out to you after you show interest. Certainly. And yeah, we can even just talk details and you can decide at that point if it works for you. You know, I'm not a high pressure salesperson. When it comes to that, I'd rather make sure people see the value in the product and understand the product. It's not something that I want to sell you for your trip down to California and be done with. This is coverage. You need to see the value so you have it year round for years to come because it will benefit you.
Certainly. And you know what? I worked in a lot of different sales jobs. I've worked construction. I've worked sales. I've worked desk jobs of different kinds. And I always found for myself sales would always come to me more naturally. When I wasn't focused on selling, I was helping people buy. And when you sort of change, when I changed my mindset from more of a salesy side of things, so it was like I'm just helping people find what they need. That I always had a lot more success that way. So I really do appreciate you coming on and sharing some information with us. What I'll probably have you do is maybe write out a little the link to the website as well as how to get in touch with you. You can probably send that over via email would probably be the best way to do that. That way I can copy and paste, exactly what you had to say, into the description for the podcast. And this will be available Thursday morning, for the listening and viewing pleasure of the Big MX Radio faithful.
Thank you so much. And I'm 100% with you, Brad. I do this for the love, caring and protecting our fellow riders. It brings me, I love helping and I it breaks my heart when someone gets hurt, but I'm so thankful that I can be there to help them through it because unfortunately it does happen in this community. So thank you so much for your time and allowing me to share a little bit about what I can do.
Well, thank you. And honestly, the pleasure's on this side of the table. It's been an absolute pleasure, especially anytime that I can connect with somebody in the motocross industry who absolutely gets it. And you're certainly one of those. Alanna Parrott here on the Big MX Radio podcast for Rider Insurance. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks again, Brad.
No problem. Don't hang up just yet. But for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there. Thank you guys so much for watching that interview with Alanna Parrott. She was a great guest. I'm really looking forward to working with her over the next year to, get you guys informed on some of the services that she provides and realizing that you can get insured for this type of activity. If you happen to be a weekend warrior like me, don't hit the track. And with just throwing caution to the wind, you can go out there and you can, get some insurance, get yourself covered. 'Cause I'm not like it's honestly, for me, it's pretty rare that I end up in the hospital, but I'm not saying never. And it's definitely happened in the last 4 years, whether it was some stitches in my finger, my hand. My goodness. I had 14 stitches in my hand, dislocated shoulders and stuff like that. If that ends up, you miss a week worth of work, that's a couple $1,000s. And, and having a policy like that can cover those expenses. Why not, do that? Especially at $17 or $33, $35 a month. That is an absolute, that's an easy decision to make. So let's get into the 450 class here right quick. And, it's the old dog once again on a brand new bike, just casually winning races on four different manufacturers. Very few guys have done that. Eli Tomac puts himself in that company and does it rather convincingly. Of course, he does benefit from that red flag. Before we get any further, I want to give a huge shout out to both, Justin Barsha and Malcolm Stewart. Stewart with a dislocated shoulder, looked like a left shoulder. Those suck. I've dislocated both my shoulders. Will he be back sooner as opposed to later? Completely depends on the severity of the tear. If it's a torn labrum, if it's a small tear in the labrum, he might be okay. You don't ride all week. Maybe you ride on Friday press to see if the shoulder can go. Otherwise, you're probably because of the wing, you might be down for a minimum of 2 weeks. If he's getting it fixed, we don't see him until, you might not even see him until after outdoors. That could be his entire year, as a shoulder is here's what I was told about my shoulders is the human shoulder is the most capable and the most unstable body or joint in the human body. So it can be, really, really, capable, and it can also be very susceptible to injury. And when it's injured, essentially what happens is you have the end of the humerus bone, like so. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're having to do a little bit of theater of the mind that my fist being the ball of your humerus bone. And then you have a bunch of cartilage and ligaments that surround that ball that allow your shoulder to have that movement. And if that happens to tear, imagine a big tear between your fingers. And once that your shoulder goes back in, that tear is still very much there and your shoulder can pop out through that break in your labrum. And that's what makes it just easier and easier. What they do to secure that is if it's an arthroscopic surgery, they will go in and they will actually sew your labrum back together because it is made of cartilage. There's no blood flow and, it would be put back together that way. It's actually very routine surgery. I added in one day. The recovery for it though was 6 months. So if you're back on a dirt bike in 5-6 months, I wouldn't expect to see Malcolm Stewart until at least the second or third outdoor if he goes that route. But if you see him at all, which honestly I would be surprised if maybe he comes back to get some SMX points or something to that effect. But yeah, I would like to think that we have, him come back maybe a couple weeks time and he's good to go, perhaps a week. It's definitely happened, but I wouldn't put my money on that unless you hear something official coming out from Husqvarna. We just had old guys, I guess, on the podium. In fact, I think everyone is at least over 25 years old. Jorge Prado spent enough time in Europe. He's definitely over 25. So this is just a vet class getting 450s done here. Ken Roczen, as old, if not older, than Tomac. I think he's just a little bit younger than Tomac, but either way, the old guys put 26 seconds, almost 27 seconds into the entire field. It was absolute rout. Those boys were out front styling and gone. In fact, even to the very end, and Kenny stalked him. It was 1.4 seconds at the end. I don't think Eli ever felt that he was really under the pressure, but he just managed that gap. Not totally indifferent than how Jet Lawrence does it when he's out front, just styling it for the boys and just gets that 2 second gap, two and a half seconds, and just sort of leaves it there. Has some extra in the tank if he needs it. Jorge Prado. If he doesn't back this up, that's just mean to the Jorge Prado fans. But to everybody who said shitty things about this guy, that's got to be like he was walking out of that race on Saturday with his head held high. I don't think he was expecting himself to get a podium. Based off qualifying, you wouldn't have expected it either, but the Spaniard just got himself a whole shot and like withstood the pressure from Hunter Lawrence and Jason Anderson. Everyone had some swings at this guy. But the reality is he had some good laps. He had a faster lap time. His best fastest lap time was better than Hunter Lawrence's fastest time. You can't say that about Jason Anderson, Cooper Webb, or Chase Sexton, but everybody else, he had a faster lap time than them. Jorge Prado gets your podium at Anaheim 2 or Anaheim 1. Will it be one of those weirdo Anaheim 1 results that just never gets replicated? Like, you have Sebastian Tortelli's win on the board of the Kawasaki. It was a total mud race. Then you had Greg Albertine, I believe, the following year in 1998. Just wins kind of out of nowhere. Also, I think it was a little bit of a muddier race, but he still gets it done. His one and only win. Speaking of which, also, you had Josh Grant in 2009. It's not his first ever Supercross on a 450 because he raced a couple of the previous year aboard Honda with HRC. When I think he was east and then he did some west round, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe that's flip-flopped. But his first race for Joe Gibbs Racing was a win, and that was the first time that Joe Gibbs Racing had ever won a Supercross, and he got them their first win. It was Anaheim 1. It was also his only win. So as I just go on the longest tangent ever there, as I mentioned, Hunter Lawrence, fourth place, certainly not what he's looking for, but also if you're Hunter Lawrence, you're not walking away head hung low. Anderson, you probably wanted a little bit more, especially because your lap time, suggested that you probably could have been up there with the guys on the podium, which is like, if you had two Suzukis, in the top five, like that says everything about what, Pipes Motorsports Group and what Dustin Pipes has built over there. I am so proud of what Dustin Pipes has been able to create with his team and just how solid it is, and like in such a short amount of time of just where they were and where his career was and where they are now with two 450 AMA champions under his rig, and doing it with Suzuki and doing it with some amazing brands. And if for those who don't know, Dustin actually went back to, I believe while he was racing, he took a sports marketing course, and I believe he graduated, and like that has been so invaluable for him. And like, and guys that he's brought into the industry like Shane Doyle and like guys that have made a huge impact. I don't think there's a lot of people who truly understand the impact that a guy like Dustin Pipes has had on the industry and this team over the last 5 years. Maybe one of the biggest unsung heroes of this all. And then he also has two guys in the top five at Anaheim 1. That has to be a huge feather in his cap and make him feel good about that. Ken Roczen aboard the Progressive Insurance Cycle Gear Suzuki. And then you also have Jason Anderson aboard the Twisted T Suzuki presented by Progressive. Unbelievable. And hats off to those guys. The number one, Cooper Webb, not the night that he was looking for. Shakes his head, probably some cuss words on the way home, but he's able to live to fight another day and has his sights set on chipping away at that the points lead that Eli Tomac has. He's going to be in it. He's going to win some races this year. Cooper Webb, although didn't look to be in championship form, you don't need to be in championship form at A1. Cooper Webb knows that. And, I would expect him to come out swinging. He had one of the fastest lap times, inside the top five fastest lap times of the race. And I would expect, San Diego to go very, very well for Cooper Webb. And if it doesn't, he'll still come back swinging because that's what Cooper does. Obviously not the night that Chase Sexton was looking for. More than a couple of times, I wouldn't say out of character moments, because like I'm sure there's going to be some comments that this is exactly of Chase Sexton, that like the actions that you expect from this guy. But that's just not fair criticism. Chase Sexton has won so many races and been so poised in so many situations. Yes, he's made mistakes in the past, and it's come back to bite him, but he's also been able to weather the storm through those and win 450 national championships in both Supercross and outdoors, even winning back-to-back championships in the 250 class. This guy's a championship winner. He's a race winner, and I expect better things and race wins from Chase Sexton throughout this season. Fastest qualifying and all that fun stuff. Chase Sexton is a guy that you can rely on for something along those lines. But ugly night from the Cowboy. Aaron Plessinger, not what he wanted whatsoever, but I expect the results at San Diego could be completely flipped from what we see inside the top 10. Especially if we get some weather, Aaron Plessinger would obviously be looking good in a situation like that. And Dylan Ferranis gets Ducati their first top 10 in AMA racing. That'll be the answer to a trivia question that I'll even get wrong in 10 years time. But either way, great to see him do that. Honestly, he's probably not super stoked in his entire weekend, but Christian Craig should be stoked on an 11th. There's only a couple guys ahead of him that I think he should be beating on a regular basis or battling closely with, and that's guys like Dylan Ferrandis and Aaron Plessinger. So he's right there. He's right where he needs to be. Same thing with Colt Nichols. Obviously, he'd probably want to be on the plus end of the Ferrandis Plessinger Craig battle. But a 12th is still a step in the right direction. Did I copy paste my exact statements from the previous, from Colt Nichols to Joey Savacci? Those two guys are certainly capable of going out and getting themselves an 8th, 9th, or 10th. They're currently in the 12th and 13th position, which isn't crazy, but you know that they have more in the tank. Justin Hill getting 14th is just a meme. That guy is an absolute rock star. He just rides a Team Tenor Racing KTM. He's probably an absolute blast with, and I would like to have a beer with him. Austin Faulkner, steady Eddie out there. Didn't see him a lot, but that's probably for the best when it comes to Austin Faulkner's 450 debut. Like, I would love for him to just go out there and get some steady rides. Same thing with Mitchell Oldenburg. I would imagine that Shane McElrath leaving with a 17th is nowhere near where he expects himself to be. He wants to be up there with his teammate on the quad lock Honda in Christian Craig. He can absolutely get there, but he needs to get better starts. RJ Hampshire, not the night that he's looking for with an 18th. And that just goes to show how stacked this field is. So the rest of them, you have Vince Freese, which, for those who are expecting Vince Freese to have this like renaissance year, I just don't expect that with the fact that it's like super not like 19 or 2018. So, I think he's a great addition to the international supercross team. He's definitely the highest end talent that team has had on there aside from, like, you know, honestly, there's been nights where Frederick Norin has been better than Vince Freese. So maybe I take that back. Overall, I think Vince has like a top five or even like a top six as a supercross, result, under his belt. So, he's definitely the highest performing athlete that's ever been on that team. Good for those guys. Mitchell Harrison holding it down for the Team Green Kawasaki's, aboard that Partzilla Blaster PRMX racing team. That's awesome. And of course, with Barcia and Stu, not racing this weekend, I would imagine Barcia's probably going to need a couple of weeks to be on the mend. Those are two spots that'll definitely go to guys like Kevin Moranz, Justin Starling, looking for them to make it into their first main events at San Diego. All right, guys, that's the podcast for today. Wish you guys all the best for this week coming up. Hopefully you get some throttle therapy. And if you're watching the race, let me know what your thoughts were. Hit me up anytime on Big MX Radio on Instagram. I read all of my DMs and would love to converse with you guys. Thank you guys so much for checking out this podcast. You guys have a great rest of your day. That's it for me. Brad Gebhardt from Big MX Radio, over and out.